Welcome to Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers,
brought to you by Cord Real Estate, your key to the heart of Nashville. I'm Steve Luther alongside my co-host, Van Hoy.
Here we peel back the layers of Nashville's vibrant scene, sitting down with the innovators, creators, and leaders who shape our city. From music to business and everything in between, we dive into the journeys that have brought them to where they are today.
We're here to uncover the stories behind the success, the passion driving their pursuits, and why they've chosen Nashville as their stage. It's about the people who dream big, push boundaries, and make this city truly unique.
So join us as we explore the heart and soul of Nashville through the eyes of those who know it best.
Well, welcome to today's episode of Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers, and Tastemakers. We're honored to have Randall Putala. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Putala.
I probably should have said that first.
Yeah. You got it right.
I know.
Wow.
We're honored to have Randall Putala, a visionary and dedicated philanthropist at the helm of two impactful organizations. As the founder and CEO of the World Hunger Team, Randall has been at the forefront of innovative solutions to combat global hunger, focusing on sustainable food growing systems that not only feed, but empower communities. And through the Senior Benefits Foundation, he champions the cause of helping seniors navigate the complexities of Medicare and Social Security benefits, ensuring that they make informed choices. With a rich background in direct marketing and a heart of service, Randall's work spans across various sectors, aiming to leave a lasting impact on society. Randall, it's a pleasure to have you today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let's kind of jump in. So share the journey that led you to start the World Hunger Team and the Senior Benefits Foundation. What inspired you to kind of focus on those particular areas of need?
Well, I come out of a food-related family. I lived in New York City in the late 70s, and my aunt ran two restaurants there. She was originally the head baker at Schraff's, which was a very famous bakery in New York, very social place. And then she had her own restaurant in Queens, and two of her biggest customers, one was Jacob Javits, and the other were the Three Stooges.
No way.
They loved her cooking.
And these are like the Ed Koch years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, actually, earlier than that.
Oh, okay.
Late 50s.
I feel like I need to go, boom, boom.
No, Ed Koch was in the 70s. Yeah. But then I just have always been a food person. I like to cook. It's my hobby. And I have
to eat.
There you go. You can eat in New York.
We get along. Well, long story short, I had a revelation. I was out fishing with my uncle. He had a beautiful teakwood Chris Craft boat out on Long Island Sheepshead Bay. Mm. He would go fishing for flukes and flounders. They're the bottom dwelling fish with the two eyes on one side. So you bait up basically six hooks and drop it in the water, and you might wait all day and never get a nibble. Well, I had just seen the Godfather movie. You know, Fredo's trick of saying the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
So I did that. I put the line in, and not 1 minute later, bam, he says, pull it up. I pull it up. There's six fish on there.
Wow.
He'd never seen that before. He goes, that'll never happen again in a million years. Rebaited the hooks, put them down, tug, six more fish. He said, we're getting out of here. He was absolutely freaking out.
That's awesome.
When that happened, I had a message come in my head. You will feed a great many people in your lifetime.
Mm.
And I knew that was my mission here on planet Earth, was to feed people.
Wow.
So it's just grown out of that.
What about the Senior Foundation?
That one came out of my direct marketing background. Basically, that's the one that pays the bills, and World Hunger Team is the mission.
Gotcha.
We help insurance agents, and they end up they support me because they get leads. What I do is help people who are just totally confused with Social Security and Medicare. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll see doctors, so lawyers, and Indian chiefs who just don't understand it.
Yeah.
You say you get your plan A, B, C, D different from your B, C, Y, K. You know, it's like, what are you talking about?
And a donut hole and everything yeah. else. Like,
so
what?
We create videos that explain things in very simple terms. Mm. And we provide educational materials at no cost. And the reason we do that, obviously, is the insurance agents like talking to these people because they need help.
Sure.
So it's growing like wildfire. We just built a huge CRM system in the cloud. And what we're doing is giving the independent insurance agents all the tools that the big guys have. Like if you work with New York Life, you have a tablet and you have push buttons. You say, send an email with a report showing all the different plan combinations. They do it all by touching the button. Independent agents haven't had that privilege. So we brought it to them.
Cool.
And it started to take off very well.
Very cool. Your profile mentioned that you've got something called the Tower of Life.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Let me just say that what we do, because we get calls all the time. Hey, have you guys got any food? And I'm like, well, we're not a food bank. Mm. Well, it says you're in the food business. Well, we're in the business of creating systems to grow food. Mm-hmm. You know, growing food is actually very simple. And you say, well, why can't we have enough food to feed the people? Well, you got to have seeds. Well, okay, if you buy a tomato, there's about 1,000 of them in there. Well, you got to have dirt. It's under your feet everywhere you walk. Well, you got to have water. Well, it comes out of the sky as rain. Well, and you got to have fertilizer. Well, every mammal on earth produces fertilizer. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is the systems. You have to protect your plants. You have to raise them a certain way. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is dumbed down the progress, the process of growing food. That's wow. our whole thing. That's our whole thing.
So is this like a hydroponics kind of thing?
We almost exclusively use what's called the Kratky system of hydroponics. And what that is you grow the plants in water, obviously, but the nutrients are all 100% natural minerals. There are products you can buy, like what we use is a product called Master Blend, and it's got all the basic mineral components, zinc, nickel, molybdenum, copper, all these trace minerals that are very critical to nutrition.
Mm.
But it's in powdered form and it's odorless. So you just mix it with water and grow the plants in it. It's really, really simple. And plants are 100% organic and 100% maximum nutrition.
Wow.
It doesn't get any better.
Where are you kind of deploying these? Like what countries do you work in?
Well, we've been active in Uganda, mm-hmm. but we're going through a complete transformation now where the Africa work is kind of going to be in my back pocket. And I'm doing that independently of what the organization's doing. Mine is going more philanthropic and working as a trainer over there. But the biggest criticism we get from people is they say, well, you're feeding people in Africa. How about doing that in America? Mm-hmm. And it's a valid point. So we're going very much almost exclusively American now. Mm. And we've got one big program that we're rolling out. It's called the Indoor Community Garden. We ran an outdoor community garden for 2 years at a place called the Branch of Nashville in Antioch. We did that in 2019 and 2020, a 2,000 square foot garden. And it's wonderful to be able to grow large quantities of food, but if you don't have a large support team, it'll kill you.
Mm.
You know, the first day it gets to be 100 degrees. They're gone. You know, you got to go out there yourself and water. So
right.
Seniors love to garden and work the farm, but they just can't do it. They can't be on their knees for 2 hours in the sun. So sure. What we're doing is bringing the garden and the farm indoors.
Wow.
So we can take an abandoned schoolhouse, like say the gymnasium of an old school, and convert it into a farm.
Incredible.
And what we do differently from a lot of the companies out there is I'm a cheapskate. I do everything on the cheap, meaning the plants don't really care how fancy the equipment is. As long as you give them what they want, which is the right light recipe, the right nutrient recipe, and water and care, they're going to grow like crazy. Mm-hmm. So we've lowered the cost of growing food indoors.
Wow.
That's very cool. Now, I would imagine, you know, these places having better food to eat, and even just you know, having this as a community garden, there's probably a larger impact on the community. What kind of impacts have you seen in communities that have?
Well, the biggest one is people are eating better.
Sure.
Our big priority right now for this is to place these units in senior centers, community centers, neighborhood groups, in areas that are known as food deserts. Here in Nashville, Dickerson Pike area, the Nations, and Antioch are our three biggest food deserts. What we've done is we've really simplified what it takes to grow food indoors. And I don't know if you can't really see these if I hold them up, but I'll give you the general idea of our biggest program for smaller institutions, and that is this grow tent. If you see that, it looks like a phone booth, basically. Right. It's a zippered tent. Well, you can buy these all day long on Amazon, And 90% of them sold on Amazon are to grow one crop in particular, if you can think what that crop might be. Well, those have one tray at the bottom because right. that plant is a very tall plant. What our tent does is it has three levels.
Ah.
And it will grow up to 108 plants simultaneously.
In that.
Wow.
In that 40-inch by 40-inch by 80-inch high space. Depending on what you grow, like if you're growing, say, collard greens, I can put eight collard greens on each level. So now you've got 24 heads of collard green growing, and you can harvest that almost every 2 weeks.
Unbelievable. So
it's a way to grow. And our target market for the consumer side is all the millennials who are probably like you, live in these condos on the 30th floor in downtown Nashville.
I love that.
And you can, you know, they're all juicers now. They
right.
Sure. Okay, the thing is, if you go to, well, they call it Whole Foods. Other people call it Whole Paycheck. and you buy your kale and your Swiss chard and your lettuce and zucchini.
Right.
And, well, it was harvested 2 weeks ago, maybe right. 3 weeks ago in Mexico or California. With ours, you harvest it at 7 a.m. in the morning. And by 7:02, you're drinking it.
Incredible.
It doesn't get fresher than that.
Sure.
And it just keeps growing.
Wow.
Now, do you see this as more of a consumer play, or is this more like, you know, I think about like the Tom's model is like mm-hmm. you buy one and right. one gets given or something like
yeah.
that. What's kind of the plan there?
Okay. The plan is that a certain percentage of the profit from the consumer sales mm-hmm. goes towards putting one of these in a food bank or in a senior center
gotcha.
Or in a school. The beauty is these can go anywhere. If you have a basement, as long as it's heated, air conditioning, and it has running water, we can grow in there.
Has this rolled out already in America, or is it still no. just in Uganda?
No, this is actually just domestic. We're not doing this
okay.
in Uganda. Is a whole different thing.
Gotcha.
This is for, it's in prototype phase right
cool.
now. We built our first one 7 years ago, and I hired a mechanical engineer up in Westmoreland, Tennessee. He's a genius of a guy, but he built that thing out of precision stainless steel, and it was going to cost $5,000
right.
for the grow tent. And I said, I don't care how wealthy you are, no one's going to pay $5,000 for
right.
a grow tent. So I've been working with the largest horticulture company in China, and it's called Orient Rise Guangzhou. And they built a two-part rack that a grown man could jump on. It's not going to fall apart. And my cost on the whole tent with that is, you know, a couple $100.
Wow.
So we've got the costs way down. We've got the technology. We even have automatic watering. We have a 2-liter Coke bottle.
Talk of my language right there. I need automatic watering.
Well, that's the thing. You see, because how many of us have a couple hours a day to garden?
Right.
Nobody. Yeah. You get in a call, you got to go on a business flight. You'd be gone for
that's
two
right.
weeks. Well, you can't call your neighbors and say, could you water my plants? Well, what
go water my crops.
What this is, that on each level, there's 4 2-liter Coke bottles in a sling, and there's a little
okay.
window in the side. It goes through an aquarium tube into a float valve into the tank. So it waters the plants while you're gone.
Amazing.
And the only thing you have to do is look in that little window, see where your water is. If it's run out of water, you got to fill it up again. That's all
wow.
you got to do.
So when is this rolling out?
We're in prototype phase.
We yeah.
should have our tires kicked and all the bugs worked out by September.
And September 24.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Are there, you said this, you were mainly focusing on the U.S., but are there plans to expand that globally into other markets or?
Down the road, the way we set it up now with this manufacturer, we were buying these elements from different companies all over China.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't speak Chinese. I speak a little bit. I took 2 years of it, you know. Wow, we shall eat out potongkwa. That's people language. That means I speak a little bit of
hey, more than me.
You
speak Japanese too, don't you?
Moto yakuri harashite kudasai.
Wow.
A little bit.
My wife speaks fluent Japanese.
She yeah. does.
Okay.
She does.
Oishii desu.
Delicious.
No, our real thing is we want this to go into different nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you have a senior center. Well, they can get money from United Way. They can get money from a community foundation in Middle Tennessee. A church group might want to grow crops and sell them at Sunday service. You might want to use the crops for Meals on Wheels. You might want to give them to your neighbors for free. You could sell them to gourmet restaurants.
Right.
So it's a fundraiser as much as it is a growing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ideal for PTSD victims, for autism, AD&D. They need therapy. and they don't fit in well in a noisy retail environment. Well, farming is as quiet as it gets.
Right.
And there's good money in it. You know, we even have a version of our grow tent to grow mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So people can grow like shiitake mushrooms and sell them to the restaurants.
Wow. Hmm.
I mean, the farming industry has changed quite a bit over the years. I would assume you're pitching this as like a much healthier option to all the GMO stuff and all the chemicals and everything out there.
Well, absolutely. See, now, a lot of these neighborhoods, they love fresh greens.
Yeah.
If you go into, you know, the underprivileged parts of town, they love like collard greens. They love mustard greens. And really, everyone likes good lettuce.
Of course.
You can make, you know, spinach. We grow spinach. Fantastic. I grow basil right now in my office in Donaldson. Wow. And I supply it to the 50 Forward Center in Donaldson. And Kevin there at the Donaldson Catering uses it to make mint tea, you know, or basil tea, rather.
Sure.
So, you know.
I bet daycares would love this. I mean, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Well, where we're pitching the indoor community garden right now is to the military. And I've been going from different groups to different groups. There's a group out of Washington called Zero Mills. And I don't know what the term Mills, M-I-L-S, I think that means someone who has an issue. They want people to live healthy, you know, the families to be happy, because some of these troops get relocated 6 and 7 times a year.
Right.
And they can't find steady employment for the spouse. Well, we're talking about putting these gardens in military bases. So when people transfer, they just go to the garden and start up, pick up what they were doing. Wow. And we have a version there. It's called the Kids Patch. It's a play on the word patch, like military patch, where the kids grow food to help their mom or dad who's in the military. And it's also got a gaming component where they bring the community together to, you know, play backgammon. And, you know, it's a long program, but it's a way to get people off the streets and get them involved. So we're really pitching this more as a community restoration project around the subject of food. People will volunteer to grow food saying, I'm doing it to help my poorer neighbors, but they're really doing it to help themselves.
Sure. Wow.
Very cool.
Does it take a lot of power?
Not at all.
It's not like it's mining ridiculous. Bitcoin or something.
No, I have 3 big banks of LEDs going in my office, and I want to say it's increased the maybe $5 a month.
Wow.
It uses LEDs today are super, super.
By the way, efficient. Nothing against Bitcoin. We love your crypto world. Okay.
You have something against LED, though, don't you?
I do have something against LED. I like my incandescent bulbs, but, you know, that makes me politically incorrect.
Man stockpiles incandescent bulbs.
Well, actually, we
don't be telling my secrets now.
We actually have to use LEDs because the light recipe is important. You have to supply everything that the sun provides.
Gotcha. Yeah, my neighbor does that. I'm like, what is happening? I've got some new neighbors. I was like, what are they doing? There's like the front, their dining room glows, you know? And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, believe it or not, but five, 10 years ago, Michigan State University did a study on changing the light recipe by different crops and using different lights, nothing different. They had the same nutrients, same seeds. They were able to grow basil that was on one end extremely mild, and on the other end as hot as a jalapeno, simply by changing the light recipe.
Incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't understand, but science is learning a lot as well.
I read we actually give off light from ourselves too, that we do have a personal glow. I don't know. Just saying. I'm learning all kinds of things about light recently.
Do you need a cigarette?
I'm smoking enough.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Okay, well, that was a long way. You originally asked about the Tower of Life. Well, we operate on a lot of different levels. And right now, this indoor community garden and the grow tent is our focus because we want to get people growing a lot of food in places where they're not growing it now.
I love it.
But on the other end, we have been involved in Africa and trying to solve the hunger crisis there. We own a 7-acre farm in Namalimba Village in Uganda, and we're calling that the Lost Crops of Africa Research Farm. Back when the Brits took over sub-Saharan Africa, pretty much across the board, that was in the 1890s, they were growing all types of natural foods that they've been growing for centuries, if not millennials. And they came and said, yeah, get rid of all that stuff. You're going to grow rice, corn, and wheat because we can export that. And so they did, and everyone got hooked on you know, those 3 crops. primarily corn. Corn is like the king. And we grow a lot of corn. We actually run a corn milling operation at our facility, but that's more to help the farmers in about a 50-mile radius because nobody was milling corn there. And we also distribute that into the back jungles of remote Uganda. Mm. And so it's an ongoing mission, but it's Africa is so bad, no matter how much money we pump in, it just never changes. So we're doing things to change that equation by lowering the cost of feeding people. Mm-hmm. And so on the low end of that, we're now doing a remote field hydroponic garden. One of your big issues in Uganda is you can't get building materials. And if you can, they're 500 miles away and you've got to get them to the middle of the jungle. Sure. So by the time you get them there, they cost five times what you started with. We're making hydroponic pallets out of used tires and discarded wooden pallets. Hmm. We're using tree branches as the post. And so we're making a raised bed garden, and we're using 5-gallon paint buckets to grow the crops in. So hmm. we're bringing that advanced hydroponic technology and teaching people who have no experience in this how to grow food year round. It is extremely inexpensive. One, we buy our nutrients in 5-pound bags. We have three things we buy, which is Master Blend, calcium nitrate, and Epsom salts, magnesium sulfate. And you mix those three and you provide 100% of the nutrients to grow that food. You don't need any manure. You don't need any outside anything. Everything is there and the plants are happy as can be. A 1-year supply, about $25.
So that'll continue on even with what you're doing here now?
Well, it's the same growing technique. We're just doing it using discarded materials because they're available anywhere.
Gotcha.
No matter how poor the country is, you can find pallets and tires because right. people ship stuff. So we're just bringing that technology and teaching people up in the jungle regions how to grow food hydroponically.
And do you have people on the ground there?
I have two ambassadors, one in Nambalimba Village and one in Mbale.
Wow.
You speak multiple languages.
Chinese, I dabble.
Japanese, Russian. Clearly that skill has probably benefited you working internationally, but do you find part of this, you have issues because of language barriers or anything like that? Or people pretty open to hearing what you have to say? Or?
No. Yeah. How can I put this? Uganda is so corrupt. Mm. It is almost impossible to do business there. They're coming around. Our farm in Namalimba Village, they now call it a model farm, and they're supporting us. They actually donated a $10,000 solar pump system to irrigate. We had to dig the borehole, but we now have all 7 acres irrigated, which, let me tell you, is a huge advantage to growing food. So they're coming around that they like us, but we originally were trying to import materials from China. And what happens is they come in by boat into Mombasa, Kenya, and the deck guy says, well, $1,000 fee to get it through our dock. Then it goes to Uganda. Oh, $1,000 fee to get it through our port or through our customs. Then you get to the village and the guy says, well, I'll take $500. You know, right. Everyone wants a handout. It's difficult. So that's why we've refocused on what can we buy locally that they right. don't know we're buying. And sure. in this case, we're buying, you know, mostly discarded materials, doing it on the cheap.
So do you work through local leaders so that you can combat that kind of thing? So
no, there is no, because they're the ones asking for the ride.
I see. Gotcha.
You know, it's everyone's looking for money. Mm. Now we have two church leaders in both locations. They run a church and they run kind of what we would call a commune back in the 60s, where all the people live in the village. They have a church, they grow all the food all together. And we support them. Right now we're supporting about 350 orphans.
And that's through your insurance company?
No, well, that's how I pay for it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Through other funding.
That's so cool.
We've got some pretty generous donations from friends. Looking for more. We need more right. people.
Right, right.
You can help. It goes right to feed the people. It goes right to Africa. But again, our marketing position in the States, just by virtue of having to get people to embrace us more, we're repositioning as how we're helping local
Americans. I see.
How we're helping sure. people right here.
Gotcha.
You've got a pretty extensive marketing background. talk a little bit about Redox printing and some of the direct marketing and just the marketing techniques in general that you've sort of been able to incorporate into what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I tell people that entrepreneur is a French word. It means I got to do what? And, when you run a nonprofit, you'll do anything to raise money. When COVID hit, we couldn't get donations for love or money. And I started an eBay business. I was buying Amazon returns and selling them on eBay. And
gotcha.
I sent a lot of money to Africa from that business.
Cool.
I decided to refocus because it was taking too much of my time away from the mission. Mm-hmm. So right now we're using direct mail for the solicitation for the senior program. And we're knocking it out of the park. We're literally getting a 5% response with phone numbers and emails, which is unheard of in the direct marketing industry these days. So, so that's, that's one way we do it. We're really focusing on social media as far as the World Hunger Team and getting people involved. We have a lot of projects, and in the past, I've been accused of trying to do too much. They say, just focus on one thing, but I can't do it.
Because you are doing a lot. I'm sitting here going through the list. And I'm like, my goodness.
I got a lot going on.
What's the summary here? Wow.
But we're actually embracing that. And what we're trying to do now is on our website, we're setting up blogs by category. Just to give you an idea, look, the Tower of Life, we talked about, that is an invention that's patent pending. It's been filed, was filed for the utility patent almost 2 years ago. We're still waiting for approval. Mm-hmm. But that's a unit that collects rainwater and purifies it. Collects, stores, and purifies up to 1,300 gallons of rainwater. And it also grows crops. And I will show you a picture, if I can find it here. That one is slated for Africa. That's going to be one of the major markets there. We're actually talking with the United Nations World Food Program. You can kind of see it's a big pyramid. Those are boxes. And how the boxes are made, they are flat panels that snap together. We've eliminated the bladder in the middle because that was a wearing out issue. So we now have it where the water weight actually makes it even tighter. So all these boxes are interconnected. We have a giant tarpaulin, clear tarp, up on tent poles that collects the rainwater. So this thing has built-in solar-powered water purification. And then inside these channels, you snap in panels and fill it with dirt, and you grow 60 linear feet of crops. And those crops are automatically irrigated using these hydroponic nutrients.
Incredible.
It's all solar-powered. The beauty of this unit is it ships flat on a pallet. So in the jungle, you just use a commercial drone, and you can place it to any coordinates that they give you with a cell phone. So that one,
it's like the Henry Ford of feeding people.
Well, see, that actually has domestic applications too. I mean, do you think there's any people in the United States, say, I don't know, California, Nevada, Arizona, who might want to have a little water on hand in the backyard and maybe grow a little food?
Right.
Yeah, sustainability is a huge thing.
Incredible.
So we're hoping that has big potential. It is also good for collecting water out in areas that have no natural streams or wells. Or water table, like in Wyoming. You can now collect rainwater and raise animals out there and go farm and do farming because you're collecting all your own rainwater.
Very cool. you've been involved in so many different things in a lot of different places. What's a memorable success story that you can tell us about? It's just like, man, I feel so good about that.
Well, I would have to say it's the farm in Uganda. They had access to cheap land, but they didn't have any. You cannot buy tractors there. They simply don't have the money for farm equipment.
Right.
And so what we've been doing is teaching them ways to counteract the natural perils they're going to face, like bugs. Nematodes are the number one nemesis of every farmer out there. They're little microscopic worms that eat at the roots, and they're particularly bad in Africa. There was a group here in Nashville that was trying to plant this crop called KENAF, K-E-N-A-F, and this goes back to the pharaohs. That's when they were growing this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful crop. It's very nutritious. Well, he planted a whole field of it in Africa, and a couple weeks later came out and every single plant had fallen flat.
Wow.
They're like, what happened? Well, the nematodes, they said, hey, we've been eating ground up, dinosaur waste from 2,000 years ago. It's like putting a fast food restaurant in. They see those new roots and they go right to them. Well, we've got systems to counteract that. We're actually developing a way to manufacture a grow cup, believe it or not, made out of like paper mache material that has stuff on the outside to kill the nematodes. They eat that instead of your roots.
Incredible.
Little known fact, and believe it or not, it was the South Koreans who discovered this. Nematodes love kimchi. You know what kimchi is?
I know what kimchi
is. You know what kimchi is. Okay. Yeah.
It's not for me, but Ashley loves it.
She loves it.
And me too. I'm not a big fan. But here's the thing. The nematodes love fermented foods. Okay. What they don't know is that it takes a three-part stomach system to digest them. So they gorge themselves. So they have a two-part digestive system, and they literally explode. So you're killing the worms without poison. This is a true story. And right now, the South Koreans are trying to patent this every which way.
We're going to have PETA on the phone here.
I know. There's something's coming from this.
No. These are bad guys. These are the ones who kill your crop. It's a huge problem here in America. Right. But what they're doing in America is dumping tons and tons of poisons and, you know, stuff to kill these worms.
Right.
Well, where do you think that stuff goes? Into the food system. And we're doing it without poisons.
Kimchi.
Just give him some kimchi.
The answer.
Now, this is even more bizarre. There's a huge problem in Lake Victoria in Uganda, in that area south of it, that some guy from China brought in water hyacinth as a decorative thing for his pond. Mm. Well, the hyacinth is the fastest growing plant on the planet. It will literally grow 2 feet a day.
Oh, wow.
And what happened was it got into Lake Victoria and it took over the lake. So when you're coming from the shore, the first 5, 6, 7 miles are nothing but these plants and you can't put a boat through them. The fishermen had to hack their way through and then hack their way back in. Well, guess what? It's just like cabbage. You can make kimchi out of water hyacinth. So we're looking to kill two birds with one stone here. Huh. Solve their hyacinth problem and help kill the nematodes.
I tell you what, it's fun to be surrounded by smart people.
Now, are you working with any other nonprofits? Like, I know there are a lot of nonprofits that work with like water purification and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, we are. We're talking, it's kind of a close-knit group. We all share stories and ideas. That's really my goal, is to supply the other nonprofits and NGOs in Africa. I don't have to be the boots on the street.
Sure.
These people can take it and run. I'm just providing the system. But we've got people kicking the tires. Like I say, the World Food Program, United Nations World Food Program has sort of been, you know, scouting us out. They don't like early stage programs. USAID has already said, once we get a prototype on the Tower of Life, you know, funding's not going to be an issue.
Wow.
So we're really right now just looking for backers, people who want to get involved in this category. And there's money in it, I can tell you. There's money in it.
So what's the big goal that you're trying to shoot for to be able to do all that?
Oh, the big goal is to get these units everywhere and get more fresh food.
Well, what's the initial big goal so that USAID can get involved?
Oh, I have to have a prototype and I have to have metrics showing.
And what's that going to cost?
Under $250,000.
There it is.
Just $250,000.
That's actually chump change in this world.
That's a fair point. Yes, fair point.
Doable.
Are there any other initiatives you've got going? I feel like you got so many different. Are there any other initiatives you're really excited about?
Yeah.
Of course.
I think we got a good one right here. Everybody can like send in a little of the crypto and they'll get it right there.
All natural pesticides. Have you ever heard of neem oil? Like if you had a garden here. And
heard of Nemo?
No. Neem. N-E-E-M. Google it. Go to Amazon. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, Ashley's the gardener. I think she uses that for something.
Yeah, because it's not poisonous and it safely kills the bugs.
Ah.
Well, what it really does is it causes the bugs to lose their appetite and then they die of starvation. So it's a natural way to go, but they're not eating your leaves of your plants. And it's expensive. It'll go on Amazon for like $80 a gallon. So it's not cheap.
Hmm.
Well, I found out about this stuff and I asked my guy in Namalimba, Robert. I said, do you have neem trees? He goes, oh, we have a few here and there. And my guy in Mbali is Mukanga, is his name. He's our ambassador there. And I said, do you have any neem trees? And he goes, we have nothing but neem trees. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, we're on the border of the unrestricted jungle. And I didn't know this, but there's parts of African countries that they just say that's like no man's land. No one owns it. You can do whatever you want there. Well, we've got, as far as the eye can see, neem trees.
Wow.
That no one's doing anything with. So we're setting up an operation to, you squeeze them just like olives. We're buying an olive crunching machine from China, and it's going to squeeze the oil and bring a lot of money into that sector, into that region of Africa. And they need it badly.
And those trees will still live.
Oh, yeah.
You squeeze the tree and then it.
Yeah. If you've ever had like a eucalyptus plant, those like kind of rounded leaves, right. Same thing. And they're just full of oil.
Incredible.
So cool.
And they get to keep the trees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It doesn't hurt the trees at all. Huh. That's what they're there for.
Amazing.
Seems like there's answers out in nature that you know, we just haven't figured out how to take advantage of.
People have been saying
about
it.
Everything, you know?
Now, here's my personal.
It's almost like someone planned it that way.
Oh.
My favorite pet peeve, my project now is low-cost chicken coops. And we're designing these in Africa using bamboo as the tent poles and ordinary plastic connectors to make the tinker toys.
Oh, yeah.
And we're buying fabric panels out of what's called machine cloth. And it's basically like a heavy cloth, but it's got metal fibers in it. And the reason you do that is because when the little rodents and foxes want to get at the chickens, they break they can't cut through.
Oh, wow.
So we're providing a low cost way to raise chickens in large quantities in Africa. And that one is one we want to go viral. We want more people because they're dying of lack of protein. 40% of sub-Saharan Africans are protein deficient. And you say, well, that just means they're hungry all the time. No, it means their bones aren't growing correctly. Their muscles and their organs are not growing correctly. They're going to have major health issues when they get to be 50 years old. And we're trying to alleviate that, not just through the plants, but also through chicken.
Wow.
Sorry, vegans. They need protein. They can eat eggs. That's not going to hurt the chicken.
There you go.
So, I mean, I can't even believe how much stuff you're involved in. What if someone else wants to get involved with nonprofits and, initiative-based things, like from your experience, how should they go about doing that? What's the best way to get involved and make a difference in your community?
Well, I would say first to volunteer with an existing nonprofit for at least 2, 3, maybe 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complicated business. And that's really been my downfall. I don't like running a nonprofit. I don't. Mm. I'm not big on the business end of things. I'm a tinker. I like coming up with ideas. And so I'm transferring my day-to-day management to other people. I've got a head of strategy, a guy named Anil Karakatu. He's in Austin, Texas. Got Andrea McElroy. She's in Long Beach, California. She's my social media gal. I've got a web gal. She's in San Antonio, Texas. I got people literally all over the country pitching in on this project. A really good guy is right here in Nashville, Terry Sasha. He's working for the state of Tennessee, kind of helping them get their social media act together. He's really high-powered guru, and he's volunteered with us. He's helping me get organized. I like dabbling with things. It's what they used to call skunk works, like making things.
Sure.
That's what I like to do.
Well, how do people get a hold of you or get involved with some of these initiatives?
Because there's something for everybody here. I mean, from young to old.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. WorldHungerTeam.org.
WorldHungerTeam.org. All right.
We're looking for volunteers of all types. Even if you just want to share ideas, even if you just want to brainstorm, tell me what you're thinking, how you would bring things to market. I'm basically looking to replace myself as soon as I can so I can go do fun things like make chicken coops.
Do they need to live in a certain place to be able to volunteer?
Nope. Anywhere in the world.
Wow. I feel like that's my number one thing I say on these things. Wow. Wow.
But you're good at it.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Well, Randall, it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm kind of blown away by what all you've got going on, but we really appreciate you coming out. Sure. Hopefully you guys will reach out to worldhungerteam.org and get some of this stuff out there in the world.
There you go.
Absolutely.
We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks.
Well, that's a wrap on today's episode of Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers.
We hope you've been inspired by the stories of passion, perseverance, and innovation right here in Nashville.
A big thank you to our guests for sharing their journeys and to you, our listeners, for joining us. And of course, our gratitude to Accord Real Estate for making this conversation possible.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.
Thank us.
Yes, you did.
Oh, I guess I did. Well, thank us. Okay.
Like I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe on your favorite platform to catch every episode and hit that notification bell. We've got plenty more fascinating guests lined up, ready to share their insights and inspirations.
And we love hearing from you. So reach out to us with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for who you'd like to hear from next.
Until next time, keep chasing your dreams and making your mark in Nashville.
Oh my goodness. Remember, am I talking to Casey
it's
Kasem?
The people behind the scenes that make the city shine.
I love it. Take care. See you behind the curtain.